You are listening to the Punkish Podcast 530. Ominous clouds arrive. The winds of chaos roar forward. The waves of destruction. And who knows what's going to happen? Roll to the shore. Will we survive? Find out. Punkish Podcast 532. Welcome back. We are here with Stan Barrett. Stan Barrett, did you like my blockbuster movie circa 1988 style intro?
Oh, I loved it. We need more of it.
Adam White, did you enjoy my Adam White, remember movie commercials in the 80s? They would say, like, you just saw Predator, and they would have, like, people that actually saw it, and they'd be like, I loved it. How come they don't do that? You know what I mean?
I remember those commercials? I mean, the realistic thing is that we're not allowed to go outside. So that is a major thing that prevents you from going to a theater and asking people what they thought about it. I don't know. Like, things are more innocent and cheesy in the 80s. Like, you could do that. I feel like these days, everyone in the crowd that you'd be asking would want their cut somehow.
They'd be like dicked about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? And if you think about the internet right now, we are just awash in the opinions of uneducated people about films in particular. So we probably don't want more of that.
You've got a bone with modern thematic cinema criticism, Adam.
Okay. The fact that there's 900 YouTube channels that do nothing but like dissect Avengers movies is not modern. It's not modern cinema criticism. It's like a huge waste of file storage.
We'll get to the show. I was planning to get right into the show. We always come up with two things I want to mention. A, I was thinking about DVDs a lot lately. DVDs are at the cheapest they've ever. You can get almost any DVD you want for like a dollar. Like literally, you know what I mean? Maybe two or three used. Will DVDs like shoot way up in value 20 years from now like records did? Because they're with me right now, digital thing is very cheap. So cable TV when it started very relatively. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think this, but I think it's possible. Will the digital media providers realize that they're not harnessing every cent they could get and therefore rapidly raise the price and restrict access to digital streaming media, thereby make DVDs worth a lot of money because then you actually own the film instead of paying a lot of money to watch it temporarily. Sam, you seem to think not.
Is VHS's like a thing where people are spending like $200 on one right now?
Well, VHS tapes are very cheap. However, VHS players are very expensive. And just today, I set up a VHA player in my parents' house so they could tape from cable.
Wow.
I feel like my worry would be less about the streaming services all of a sudden deciding that they were going to milk me. And more that we were going to have, I don't know, like a solar flare or something that was going to destroy all of my, you know, file copies of things. But and not that I have any, so I guess I probably don't care that much. I guess if you're like a doomsday prepper, having a bunker full of, DVDs of Police Academy movies, I guess is a thing that you're going to want to have. But I keep finding that like I engage with a piece of film. Maybe once. Like, there's a handful of movies, I think, that I've really watched more than once in my adult life. And the fact that I don't own a copy of, I don't know, Fargo, doesn't really weigh on me. And if I go to my streaming service of choice and it isn't there, that may be kind of annoying, but I suppose I could go to a library and get it or something like that. So, You don't need DVDs.
I also think that you're asking, like, probably three, like, people that don't watch a lot of movies or, like, cares about music more than we do about movies. Because I also, like, watch a movie once and, like, you know, move on. But, like, you know, I could play the same record or the same streaming album over and over and over as I'm working or I'm yelling at people on the phone, you know, like, all day. And it's totally okay.
Are you saying you have a specific, like, Sam Barrett anger soundtrack? Like, if you're really going to give it to the phone company, you put on, like, a Sick of It All record and just get really pumped and yell at them?
Yeah, so lately I've been playing a lot of A Wilhelm Scream because they just announced those represses. So I've been playing that a lot, and it's been very motivational for me to, like, tell people, like, off or, like, what to do.
Second question. I actually picked up at this record store a bunch of used Kurosawa DVDs. I got a Seven Samurai, of course. I got Rashomon, and I got Kagemusha. Are you guys familiar with the cinematic wonderment of Akira Kurosawa?
No.
Adam, you're a nerd.
Only in reference to, like, worse media that people have said has been inspired by Kurosawa, and it's one of those things that, like, not being a person that was ever in, like, a film circle or anything like that, like, I never had that phase where I went and, like, dug into the classics of this or that auteur to see what they were all about. It was always, you know, there's, like, a long list of things I'm going to do when I'm, like, 65, and, you know, old samurai movies is totally on the list.
Yeah, I'm like that, and I'm not necessarily a cinephile. I don't really know a whole lot about movies, but, man, people, you owe it to yourself to check out Kurosawa. He's got, well, the samurai films, but he's got non-samurai films. He's got, like, detective films and stuff. But, man, these Kurosawa samurai films, they're, like, so hardcore. Like, they're not, like, kung fu movies, like, where, like, all the action's quick. It's, like blunt, deadly combat between samurais, and it's actually, like, based off Hamlet or something. The Hamlet or King Lear? King Lear, I think. Is Kagemusha. Anyway, it's freaking intense, and everyone should watch these movies. They're excellent. One thing I got to talk about, then we'll play a song, then we'll come back. I talked to Tom Prama today. If you listen to his podcast or you listen to our podcast, there's some bad feelings there, or there were. I talked to Tom. It's cool now. We smoothed it over. I didn't want to prolong conflict with Tom, so I talked with him, and he asked me to say that. And this is true. I mean, I don't think Tom's a bad guy. I think Tom's a good guy. I like Tom. With regards to that letter, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. But when I read the letter, I did not necessarily think that it would cause a chain reaction. Had I known that, I probably wouldn't have read that. I mean, I just thought it was something minor. But Tom and I are square. He asked me to say this on the podcast, which is fine. I think he's going to say something on his podcast. But other than that, so don't email us about it. It's smoothed over. It's cool. And everything's good there. Speaking of positivity, let's play a song, and then we will come back. I'm going to play a Rudimentary P&I track. Most positive band in the world. This is Rudimentary P&I doing Path of Glory.
Miles.
we're back. Rudimentary Phenom. They're putting out their first album in 13 years, although it was probably recorded about 10 years ago. And it is called Great War. And it's got 10 tracks, and it's out on La Vida Es Un Moose Records, which is an excellent – La Vida Es Un Moose is a label out in the UK, and they do a lot of – actually, it's out on Field Records, which is a sub-label of La Vida Es Un Moose. And they do a lot of Anarcho reissues. They did Zounds reissues. I think they did an Omega Tribe reissue. A lot of cool stuff. There's two tracks released so far. These tracks have been somewhat polarizing in the Rudimentary Phenom fandom. I've got very strong – Adam or Sam, you guys want to kick this off? You want me to kick it off?
I want to know why it's polarizing.
It's polarizing. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, I really do. I'm curious because like my exposure to the whole Rudimentary Phenom universe is your fandom. So, how does this resonate within that group I've never penetrated?
Some people have said that they're not a fan of production, or that the levels sound weird, or that the actual sound recording itself sounds weird. I disagree entirely. Both of these tracks do sound kind of differently, but one of the things that I like about the Rudimentary Phenom discography, especially starting with Flame of Insanity, or Echoes of Anguish, rather, I call Flame of Insanity, Echoes of Anguish, is that they all kind of follow a similar pattern, 10 or 12 tracks, short, run about a minute and a half long each. And Blinko often just repeats the same line over and over and over. These two tracks kind of, he does that, but doesn't repeat the same line over and over and over. But I like how these tracks are actually more intense than the other things, messier sounding, louder sounding, more distorted sounding, and honestly, kind of crazier sounding. I don't mean to make light of Insanity or Mental Health, but you know, that's part of the Rudimentary Phenom discography. And that these tracks sound totally whacked out, especially sound story in Path of Glory. And I like how intense and berserk it sounds and how like, the levels kind of shake all over. To me, that's just like the next step after No More Pain, which found Rudimentary Phenom, you know, kind of more exploring mental health. Or, well, I'd say insanity. They say insanity issues, which they kind of didn't, I guess, fully delve into previous record. So I dig how whacked out this record is sounding, and I dig that it's slightly different than the last one. But I dig how all the Rudimentary Phenom records are slightly different than each other, and I'm psyched about it.
Does it bother you? And maybe bother is not the right word, but does it give you pause when something like this comes out? And as you said, it was written or potentially recorded a decade ago. Because you always want to think that the music that you're about to hear from an artist is somehow reflective of that artist's present. And that's almost never the case, because even on like a normal album cycle, by the time you, the fan, gets your hands on a record that comes out, you know, there's quite possible the band recorded that stuff a year ago or more, which means that it was maybe even written 2 years ago. It's potentially music that the band is just like mentally tired of and has moved on to something different. So there's that artifice about a band's, you know, new song coming out. But in something like this, where it was 10 years ago, like 10 years from 2021 was like a universe away, just in terms of like world events and stuff like that. Right. Like of course, pre-pandemic, but pre-Trump. Right. Like just like the whole world was different then. Does that bother you, or is not bother? I have bother's not the right word. Does it give you any kind of pause, I guess, as a fan, or is this so reflective of Blinko's mental state that it doesn't really matter what's happening in the rest of the universe?
If it was like Jello Biafra or like Run the Jewels, it would give me pause. But because it's Nick Blinko and because his dick is universal and very rarely, if ever, tied down to contemporary events, I think it's almost irrelevant as to when it comes out. The only thing that might be an issue, I would say, is the production might sound dated because it's like 10 years old or whatever. But hey, I mean, production doesn't sound that different now than it did 20 years ago, Frank. I mean, ever since production went digital, it sounds almost the same. Now it's louder. But this, I think, sounds fantastic, weird. And so with Blink, because Blinko is in his own universe, and because he basically, because Blinko probably doesn't have that much interaction with other people, and Blinko isn't the kind of guy that goes to the supermarket and isn't the kind of guy that reads the newspaper and, you know, talks with his friends because he's kind of in his own world. I would say it's almost irrelevant as to when it comes out. Also, while rudimentary P&I records can certainly be reflective of Dick Blanco's mindset, particularly Cacophony, particularly Pope Adrian of 37, I think later day records aren't necessarily I'm Nick Blanco and here's how I'm thinking now. I think they're more I'm Nick Blanco and these are universal conclusions that I've come to and have found to be real and have lasted, have held us through for a long time in my life. So for rudimentary P&I, I would say I would agree with you normally, but because rudimentary P&I is such an exceptional band, and I use exceptional both the excellent sense and also not like any other, that is not much of a concern for me. And also, I'm just going to get more RP because I thought I never would. Bro.
All right.
Adam.
Yes.
One of your favorite bands is putting out a double disc record. We talked a little bit about this, and I am very psyched on it. F'd Up have released part two of their Year of the Horse record. And unlike all the other Zodiac records, which are usually a long track on side A and a unrelated or, well, either an unrelated or related track on side B that is not explicitly a Zodiac track, this is their first Zodiac release where the entire release is a Zodiac record. And not only that, it's their first Zodiac record where it's a double disc. And I don't know if anybody really mentioned this, but there's a direct comparison to Sleep Dope Smoker. Sleep Dope Smoker is a single song. It's four sides, although I like the CD version. That's just one straight track. And it's a massive song that has – it's a massive song that is not many songs together. It is literally one song, but it holds your interest throughout. I feel as though F'd Up, Year of the Horse is just like that. And this might be the most exciting Zodiac to date, fighting for me for top of the hill, Year of the Dragon, Year of the Pig. But I am digging this, and I think Year 2, which is even freakier than Act 1, is hot. And – it's got a whole, like, although I'm not sure if I'm a fan of this, and Adam, you can respond. This is yet another concept record that is literally like a story, like a storybook, just like David Comes to Life and just like Dose Your Dreams. Is F'd Up getting too caught up in what we'll call the rush syndrome? Yeah. That is, in addition to making a cool record with cool music, they literally have to tell a complete story that unlike, say, David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust, Fighter from Mars, unlike the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper, which doesn't really tell a story, at least the lyrics alone, here, F'd Up directly trying to tell a story in the lyric. Adam, does that give you pause or cause for concern?
No, only because the Zodiacs are like such their own animal that whatever they're going to do on them, I feel like is pretty contained, right? Yeah, yeah, that was a pun. I didn't mean for that. But like, but they are totally leaning in to the story aspect of it to the point where like there is a book. Right. Like the, by book, I mean, like from like the play standpoint, like there is a libretto, which they are calling the libretto, which is like super hilarious to me, which is just these like lavish liner notes that you can grab right now as PDF that actually like walk through, you know, the narrative and which the players are and the various parts of it and all this kind of stuff. And the band was when they released part one of this, act one, they were sharing that libretto file like with zeal, like just, you know, they couldn't trip over themselves more to kind of get that file into people's hands. And I feel that that Mike in particular is just rolling around in this as a storytelling record and just having so much fun with that. So that to me is kind of infectious and is adorable. This track, this second part is totally nuts. It probably changes genre like half a dozen times, if not more, throughout the course of the song. And then, but it does things that I think are just absolute winks at the audience. I mean, Fucked Ups in particular on their Zodiac song can be kind of self-serious. Like, you don't listen to like Year of the Pig and think that they're, you know, joking around with you. But at 11 minutes into this, it all of a sudden just jumps into like a straight, like spaghetti Western soundtrack, you know, like there's whistling, like it took all of their self-control not to put a whip noise and someone yelling yeehaw in the middle of this song. And so they're just grabbing the horse imagery and just leaning right into that with like with the biggest smile on their face in the middle of this. And it's wonderful. It's super, it's almost goofy. This one. But I'm totally in for it. I'm down for this. I'm down for fucked up when they want to go the maximum bounds of whichever they're doing. And this feels like them really pushing on the edges of stuff. So yeah, I'm a big fan of it. It's super fun. It's just a riot.
Damn, but, you and I ever see F'd up together at a show? I feel like we might have in Asbury Park.
We might have. Well, we might have. I don't know. Everything's starting to blur together because every day is the same day these days. But yeah, no, like we might have seen them. And I think if we did see them, they're usually like, you know, crazy on stage, so that would make sense. I actually don't really listen to Fucked Up or Effed Up so much or ever. So when this came up, I was like, oh, interesting, let me check it out. It's like, you know, 26 minutes long. You know, this is definitely not the first time that, like, you know, someone has made a really, 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 really long song. And, you know, I guess as an artist, sometimes, like, you know, you need to get creative. And, you know, I don't fault them for any of that. If they feel compelled to make a really long song with 10 million parts and make it almost like artsy, like, I'm all for it.
Here's the concern that I have. Is F'd Up is now about 3 releases in, or maybe even 4 or 5, actually like 5 releases in, for COVID, during the COVID era, all digital. I really want to version of this. I really want a physical version of their live album, and I really want a physical version of the last mixtape. Will we get it, or will F'd Up just say, no, we're not going to do it before going to the next? That's my...
I can't imagine that they're not going to do physical of Year of the Horse. The others I could totally see not getting runs, but this they must. But it is weird that they haven't announced it yet. I mean, like, Mike said that they were, like, he said that it was going to come, but it is a little weird that they haven't, like, at least even announced who they're working with on it. I find that kind of curious.
Do you think it has anything to do with just like pressing things right now, like records? Because, you know, last Friday was Bandcamp day, and there was like so many pre-orders on Friday. Just on Friday.
it could, and there's definitely, I feel like there is an issue there. I was speaking to an artist a couple nights ago, and he mentioned to me in particular that he has a record coming out, and that their plans are all up in the air right now because they have no idea when they're going to be able to get anything back from the plant. So there's
that. Was it Billy Joel you were talking to?
No, I don't know why I'm hiding that. I was talking to Wade McNeil, who's the singer to Gallows and is in Alexis on Fire, and he has like a psych record that he's recorded that is coming out at some point, but he wasn't able to tell me like anything about it, even though it's been like recorded and in the can for a while because just like the pressing issues of that. But even like outside of that, there's definitely like for some of these high demand records, I think some pressure that's happening. And I think maybe like the closest thing to compare the Zodiac kind of release to would be they just released. So Constellation Records just announced a new record from Godspeed You Black Emperor, the Montreal based like post-rock band. And they announced the thing, and immediately their vinyl pre-sales of it like all ground to a halt because like all of the copies that they could possibly, you know, have in their inventory, like even on a pre-sale basis, were just gone. So then they had to switch to a method of saying like, okay, stop trying to order the vinyl through us because it's not going to happen. We want you to go out and like try to pre-order it through your local record store, and we'll somehow make copies and get it out to them. And it might just be a play on their part to like get you to go, you know, go to your local record store, but it sort of seems like they don't have enough. So I wonder if there is a real problem there.
There you have it. Listen, speaking of things that are not a problem, new Joe Strummer track has been released. But is there a problem? The track is off the upcoming Joe Strummer collection called Assembly, which is out on George Harrison's Dark Horse Records, which I find very And Assembly is basically Joe Strummer's greatest hit, with more of an emphasis on the hits as opposed to demos and outtakes, which was Strummer 101 or 100 or whatever. Strummer 101, whatever that compilation. The new track is yet another version of Dunko Partner. Sam Barrett, Dunko Partner, famous New Orleans soul song, covered by many New Orleans artists, covered by Joe Strummer and the 101ers, and in The Clash, and in with Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros. This is literally the fourth version that has been released of Joe Strummer doing Dunko Partner. Are we Dunkoed out, or do we want more Dunko?
Well, I listened to the song today, and I actually enjoyed it. So I don't necessarily think that we're Dunkoed out yet. I think that, you know, if with every subsequent, like, I guess, recording of it, if there's something different about it, then, you know, I would welcome it. Because if it's a band that I love, right, if they recorded something that was completely reimagined, like the Bounce Pistols did an entire reimagined album on acoustic, and, you know, I lap that up. So, you know, like, I would welcome it.
The album version of Dunko Partner was so full of, like, strange Sandinista noises that to have a version that is just Joe working it acoustically, I think is a welcome addition to the catalog that's there. But John, this whole thing has opened up a weird internet rabbit hole for me that you would appreciate, because I feel like you go on these. So if you think about the Sandinista version of Dunko Partner, what is one of the more distinctive parts of it to you? I'm curious to what your answer is here.
Honestly, it doesn't even sound like the original song. The weird sound effects in the background, I'd say.
Right. Among the weird sound effects that are in the background of that song, which involve a lot of, like, weird, like, poinks and, you know,
yeah,
bloinks, there's a fiddle.
Oh, Time and Dog.
Yeah, well, so that was my understanding, was that was Time and Dog, because Time and Dog is all over other songs on Sandinista and, you know, sings on, like, Lose the Skin. So, and then later Time and Dog joins the Mescaleros, so of course he would have played Dunko Partner with the band then. There is
and
video.
What other band was Time and Dog? What other band was Time and Dog in?
Oh, I don't know what other band was
Time and Dog. 101ers.
Oh shit, okay. I didn't actually know that. So, but then there's video online of Carbon Silicon, which is Mick Jones's band from the early 2000s, playing on stage a cover of Dunko Partner, and Time and Dog is there on the fiddle with them, right? So it's a weird YouTube video because it is not the whole song or anything like that. It's clearly from, like, the era when cell phones weren't as good, but regardless, right? So in my head, the distinctive, like, little like, fun little fiddle bits that are in the back of the Sandinista version of Dunko Partner is, of course, Time and Dog. But I cannot find anything on the internet that actually says that song's, like, that Sandinista studio recording is Time and Dog playing on that track.
Should we look at the record?
Well, here's the problem. My copy of Sandinista, which is lovingly fished out of a flea market bin, does not come with the big, cool newspaper insert.
Ah.
So
I do have a big newspaper insert. So let me look at the next story here. The next story is about the cassette tape. So you and Sam talk about the cassette tape. I will go grab my copy and we will stop.
Find out. Is Time and Dog actually credited on the Sandinista version of Dunko Partner? Because this is an important thing that we need to know.
You guys talk about that tape, I'll be back.
Yeah, please do. Please go find that. So, all right. So this next story is a death, actually. So it is an in memoriam story. So a gentleman by the name of Lou Ottens has passed away. He passed away the past Saturday of us recording this at the age of 94. He is notable as he was credited with leading the invention of the cassette tape, which is really like God's favorite format for music. I mean, he was also one of the collaborators who helped invent the compact disc later, but you know, who cares about that? So while he was working for the Dutch-based Philips company, Ottens wanted to create a smaller, cheaper version of the clunky reel-to-reel music format. So in 1963, the compact cassette was released to the world, and that is one of Mr. Otten's main legacies there. Now, interestingly, and I think John probably added this to the story because he's a CD booster, but interestingly, in later years, Otten himself stated that the tape was prone to noise and distortion and believed that compact discs were superior. But we know he's just being humble in that case. So there you go. So yeah, if you want to go over to NPR, they have a quite in-depth obituary that they had put together about him that really talks about the history of the cassette and how Otten's was involved in it. So that is totally worth your time to go seek that out. So it's on NPR.org. So there you go. So you know, rest in peace, Lou Otten's inventor of the glorious cassette tape. That's what we have to say. John, are you back?
I literally sat down a second to John.
Oh, there you go. So I just read a glowing Lou Otten's obituary, for which we all, you know, raise a glass in his honor. Do you have either a Lou Otten's anecdote or evidence that Time and Dog played on Junko Partner?
Well, Lou Otten's, props to Lou Otten's for creating the cassette tape. I was an unfairly maligned medium, both historically and temporarily. Historically, they only had reel-to-reel things, which were expensive, bulky, and you couldn't carry around. So, yes, cassette tape sounded a little bit worse than reel-to-reel, but they were cheaper and easier, were very portable, so cheers to Lou for that. In the contemporary context, cassette tapes are still very cheap. You can get 120 minutes on a cassette tape, and it's easy to make a cassette tape at home that looks semi-professional. So kudos to Lou, and I appreciate him on making that format. I didn't even know that there was one guy that made that. I thought it was more like a compact disc where it was like a team. But here, essentially, it was one guy leading the charge to make that tape. It's amazing. Anyway, so that's cool. So anyways, I am looking at Armageddon Times number 3, and I am looking at Junko Partner. Writer at present unknown. And it doesn't have credits on the song itself. Let me go to the credits. Let's see here. Here we go. Guess, how do you like that? It lists the guest musicians, but it doesn't say who played what. Mickey Gallagher, Time and Dog, Norman Watroy, J.P. Nicholson, Ellen Foley. Of course, Ellen Foley, who also sang with Meatloaf and also recorded a solo album produced by Mick Jones and Ian Hunter. Ray Gascone, David Yates, Ben Hargitay, Lou and Ben and Marcia Gallagher, and a whole bunch of other. Lowest credit on Sandinista. Batters. Does anyone know who Batters? That is Paul Simonon's dog.
Oh.
And so if you hear a dog barking on the record, that's Battersea the dog. Anyway, it doesn't say who played violin on Junko Partner, but I got Time and Dog.
You would reason that it was Time and Dog, but there is nowhere explicitly on the internet that says X equals Y, and it is bothering me. Mm. And like, I could go make it happen just by like editing a punk news story and putting it in there, but I'm just inventing the truth then.
Is Time and Dog on Twitter? We can ask.
He is.
Let's ask.
Well, I was going to, and then I realized that I had to make my kids dinner. So this is part of my mission in life this week is to find out.
All right. Well,
there you go. So let's play a song before we come back and talk about some of the crazy new media that was available this next week.
I'll point out, Adam.
Oh, yeah.
Your love of digital media let you down this time, didn't it? Come to John, Fizz, with the Fizz. Say stop, please, Fizz. I don't have it on my TVs for life, baby. Record for life.
You didn't solve the problem, though.
Well, I could have had they filled it out on the actual thing.
And my physical copy of Sandinista is all fucked up as physical things can be, and therefore I don't have this paper.
like almost every copy of Sandinista is so beat up that they printed it cheaply to cut down on costs. Most copies of Sandinista are so
well, and also because there's like 900 records that just bursts out of the sleeve at a certain point. Ugh. Sam, play a song. What do you got?
Okay. So Tiger Shaw just released an album. I Won't Care How You Remember Me. So that just came out, I think, March 5th. So one of these Fridays, out on Hopeless. So I'm going to play Hesitation.
Hesitation. We're back. John, we had a whole bunch of various media here. What do you want to do?
Let's talk about Mordecai the Dog, and then we can talk about a citizen or something. Listen, there's a band from Philadelphia called Roadkill. Roadkill is really just a young lady named Phil that plays guitar and sings, and she has revolving cast people that she plays with. Roadkill actually played, I think it was, she played the Summer Chimera, which was her, Danbert, and Sturgeon, and Crazy in the Brain. And they put out a new video. The video is called Pick Up the Litter. And in the video, you can see Mordecai the Dog. The camera is on the back of Mordecai the Dog. And he goes through he goes through a large portion of the Philadelphia punk scene. And we get to check out where he visits. I felt very cool watching the video because I could identify the place that he goes to in the Philly punk scene. And I know a lot of the people, you know, like when you're watching a video with like Dave Markey or even Henry Rollins or Keith Morris, or Ian MacKaye, and it's like, it'll be a picture of like Chuck Kowski standing next to like 12 people. And you're like, oh, that's Chuck Kowski. And then Ian MacKaye be like, well, there's Chuck Kowski. And there's, Bill Smithers. You know, he drove us to pick up the 7-inch sleeves from Minor Threat's first. You know, this is Stevie, Smith. And he like name all these that you would just assume are nameless people that nobody knows. I felt very cool watching the video, even though I'm not, because I know a lot of the people in this video. I actually think this video is super cool and interesting, and I don't think I've ever seen a video that was like on the back of a dog as he goes through a city or wherever. I thought that was super clever. In fact, I thought the video was so interesting, I wondered, is it at the expense of the song? Would I even care about the song if this video wasn't attached? That's the question. Mm.
Well, I think the song is actually interesting. It's not necessarily my jam, but, you know, I did enjoy the song. I did enjoy the dog more than I enjoyed the song, so yes. But I do think that the video does give a very honest depiction of Philly. And the only thing that kind of bothered me was, you know, I kind of wondered if this was shot, like, before the pandemic.
It was shot before the pandemic. And honestly, I think it was almost shot, like, 2 years ago. So this was shot, like, way before.
Even better, because I almost, like, literally had a heart attack. I was like, those kids don't have masks on. But, yeah, no, I really think that it, having, we need nice things to look at. And to me, I love dogs. So I really, really appreciated something nice.
Creating a piece of media like this that does walk through like a time and place in a scene is really a service that you are giving to the future for exactly the reasons that John stated. Like one day when this particular moment in, you know, Philly independent rock has passed, there's going to be people who maybe look back at this video in particular and point out those exact kind of things. And you'd be surprised at the lack of those documents that actually exist in the world. So, you know, people should be doing more of this stuff.
One of the things I appreciated about this is this did show how relatively crusty or max rock and roll style punk Philly is, because I would argue Philly is one of the crustier or max rock and roll style punks there are on it, which I dig.
Well, I wouldn't say crusty. I would just say really DIY.
Ah,
fair. Like it really did show a good sign, like a side of Philly. You know, I've been going to Philly for like over 10 years, just, you know, visiting friends and whatever. And, you know, it will get dated at some point, because, you know, in this pandemic, things have been closing left and right. So, you know, it was really nice to be able to, I guess, like, look back and see, oh, that's what it used to look like. I don't know what the status is of any of these establishments right now. But, but yeah, no, it's,
I think it's Repo Records in there. I feel bad that I didn't give a shout out to Repo Records. But maybe it's not. It's tough to say when it's from a dog's eye view. No, I'm almost sure it's Repo Records. Damn, I should give them a shout out.
Yeah, anyway. It looks like Repo.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. Listen, Citizen, they put out a new track called Black and Red. Sam, tell us all about the Citizen. Tell us about the Black and Red.
Yeah, so Black and Red is, I think, the third single that came off of their fourth full-length album. The album's called Life in Your Glass World. It's coming out soon, March 26th, through Run for Cover. I did like this track. I did listen to the other two, and I think this one is, I guess, more like what Citizen would sound like. I do think that they are exploring other noises and maybe synths and stuff with this new album. So we'll see what happens. I did pre-order the album, so I'm waiting for it.
Adam, you love Citizen?
I'm not super aware of Citizen's past stuff, but like this is there's a lot of new order in this, right? Like, that's like the which is not a bad thing at all, because I love new order. But I struggle with that with bands these days, because as I decided at some point that I need to do like explore the new order universe, I came to realize that like most bands sound like New Order these days. Like they're responsible for like 95% of the musical output in the universe. So whenever I run into that, I always have to stop and ask myself, I'm like, would I rather be listening to New Order? And, you know, Citizen does a fine job despite that tough, you know, that tough bar that I'm going to put in front of them there.
On a related, Sam and Adam, have you had this? I was directing last week, and the guy's like, "So, John, have you heard any new cool new music?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, this band Lotion that I always talk about like every week. They haven't put out a record in like a year or so." I'm like, "Oh yeah, there's a band Lotion you should check out, you know." But also that band Skullful, which is cool. But anyway, he's like, "Oh, that's cool, man. Hey, check out this band, man." And he plays it, and it's just like this like watered down like indie Joy Division stuff. And he's like, "Isn't this awesome?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's something." I feel like people love like watered down, crappy indie Joy Division ripoff bands, and everyone's like, "So great!" And I'm like, "There's nothing here." Have you guys had that experience?
Well, I would have to say everyone's a little different, right?
No, Sam. Everyone thinks exactly like me.
No. So, like, you know, they might enjoy watered down Joy Division crap, and we all, I think even the three of us, we have different things that we like, right? And which is all, you know, I guess encompassed in this punk world, right? Yeah, no, that happens quite often. Like, people will tell me, "Oh, check out this band," or whatever, and then I'll listen to it, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, well, that's cool, but not really my thing." You know, I tend to like really emo stuff or really fast and melodic stuff. So, you know.
I feel like 10 years ago, it was Watered Down Pill. Like, there were all these bands that sounded like Watered Down Pill, and, like, Pitchfork was all over them, and it was just like, I'm like, have none of you listened to Public Image Limited? Because all of this just sounds like if you took Pill and removed John, therefore making Pill just kind of rhythmic, but not weird or dangerous, and that is, like, a whole slate of bands for a certain period there. And, yeah, it's tough. But then I wonder, like, is that the same opinion that, I don't know, like a hardcore Clash fan would have had when we were all geeking out about Rancid in 1997? I don't know.
Yeah, but point of that, though, Adam, is that is a valid criticism of Rancid. You know what I mean? Like, I like Rancid a lot. I think, you know, they're, you know, Let's Go, Out Come the Wolves, Life Won't Wait, and Rancid 5 are all really great records. But that is a valid complaint on Rancid, and honestly, they'll never get that stink off them. They can be as rich and famous as they want to be, but they'll always have that stink and just kind of ripping off.
Well, I know, absolutely, but I always saw it as, like, for some reason, like, with Rancid, and maybe it's just because I loved Rancid, is that, like, I saw it as hero worship. I'm like, I love the Clash. Rancid loves the Clash. Rancid's going all in on this Clash stuff because the Clash are great and Rancid know this. Yay. I would never listen to one of these bands that like sounds like a watered down like Pill or Joy Division and be like, and make that same equation. I'd just be like, why aren't I listening to Pill or Joy Division?
Well, that's because honestly, I suppose Rancid is better. I mean, Rancid's a great band and their songs are great.
That may be. Anyways, though, this Citizen song is totally fine. You should go check it out.
Here's something I'm on the fence about. Ratanate, Black Rat. Man, they're putting out a new album. It's their third one on April 23 via La Vida Es Un Moose. The new record is called Un Vida Vulgar, An Ugly Life. Here's why I'm on the fence. Ratanegra was a band that had a ton of buzz when they put out their second record. And they, I believe they toured the U.S. and people were really into it. And I was kind of into it too. And this is not them, me. I dig new tracks out right now. Desconfía de ese chico. Which it sounds really cool, man. I dig it. It's almost got like a new wave, almost Ronnie Spector kind of thing. But I definitely have a hard time getting into music where I don't understand what they're saying. I'm not necessarily a lyrics guy in that I pour over. I like lyrics a lot, but if a band has cool lyrics but crappy music, I'm not into it. So I need cool lyrics and badass music for me. And so for me, when it's in a different language, then it has trouble keeping my attention. And that's not the fault of the band. I think they write their native language. Is it a fault of me? Or is that a thing that many people have? And also, I kind of want to learn Spanish. I mean, I know a little bit of Spanish, not fun. I kind of want to learn Spanish better so I can enjoy Ratanegra, honestly.
I've been, as part of my my other music writing that I do. I mean, I've been really forcing myself to figure out like where the cool bands are coming out of Quebec. So it means I'm listening to a lot of stuff that is in French. And what I think I've come to realize is that I'm not a lyrics person, which is to say, like, I will go and listen to some wacky punk band that is singing in English, and I couldn't necessarily tell you what they were singing in individual chorus. I could tell you what it sounds like, but I don't know if I could actually, like, pluck out, you know, individual lines of those songs, especially when it comes to, like, hardcore and stuff like that. So when I admit to that, I find it way easier to listen to foreign language punk rock, and it doesn't bother me too much. I'm running on the maybe naive assumption that they're not actually saying anything that is all that offensive.
Yeah, I am on your train, Adam, about not necessarily needing the lyric to be super stellar. You know, before the pandemic, I went to Japan, and I somehow went down the rabbit hole of finding out about a whole bunch of, like, Japanese punk bands. And there are a few that has made it to the States and, you know, or the UK or something, where things are pressed. And the lyrics with them, not so good, especially if they're singing in English, because, you know, they have to have a translator or someone that translates, and the person doing the translating might not be, you know, American or English. It might not be their first language, you know. So I have been lately actually listening to a lot of, like, Japanese punk, and it hasn't really bothered me that the words are not right, or they're singing half in another language and half in English. Just as long as the music work for me, and the lyric, like, you know, the vocal progressions work for the music, then I'm a-okay with that.
Well, Sam, you actually tie this into our next and last topic. Relapse Records is re-releasing Zao's only material and the new album by the death band She, with Shivering Harsh Immortal. Zao is a band from the early 80s in Japan. They were one of the dark hardcore bands. They only ever released 6 official tracks, 4 on an EP and 2 on a compilation. I think it was Hardcore Lawful Assembly, but I could be wrong. And so the new release by Relapse has awesome studio tracks and, like, literally like 30 live tracks, which I believe were taken from a very limited edition CD Zao put out in Japan, like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Very much following in the vein of season reissues by Relapse. This is the first American reissue of Zao, and it's really the first world, first broadly distributed release of this very cult and relatively obscure Japanese punk band. I know I'm like, John, you know, Zao's one of the heavy hitters of Japanese punk. They're not obscure at all. But honestly, the fact is, no one, most people in regular music, and even most punks, don't even know who Zao is. But they're rad, and I think a lot. And also, I can now sell my 7-inch from 2012, because now I get it all on CD. And so I'm excited for this. But one of the things that Sam brings up is there very much is lyrical translation with Zao. And the question is this purposeful lyrical translation? Is it accidental lyrical translation? And some of the lyric could be read, when read in English, can be extremely over the top, such as making love with devil, which is about having sex with Satan. So, and the other question is, even if it's accidental or unintended, you know, word clash, is that still interesting or weird and cool? The other thing coming out from Relapse is the SHI or She record, which is fronted by Cherry. Nakatashi, Cherry Nishida, which is the singer of Zao, and She is very much the successor band to Zao, except for where Zao was pretty much straight up dark hardcore, She has some electronic and drone elements, and frankly is very cool, and people don't talk about them nearly as much as Zao and Deezum, but I think She really should get a lot more attention everywhere in the United States. A very cool band. Sam, you were talking about how you recently checked out that. Are you a fan of that? Or as some people say, Zhao. But I talked to a Japanese guy and he said Zhao. But I'm not sure he's been writing.
No, I actually have not heard of Zhao. And I did check it out today. And yes, it is very not my thing because it's a, you know, death metal. but yeah, no, like I grew up kind of knowing Chinese and, you know, literal translations of things in Chinese or like, you know, in an Asian language to English, it's kind of hard to do without context. So, you know, there, whatever translation is that is on the record is probably the best that they can do. Or again, it's accidentally wrong. So I honestly, I don't fault any of these Asian bands trying to do music in English because, you know, I do understand that by singing in English, because I've traveled around this world before COVID a bit, singing in English does like broaden your exposure to like other people, because most people either first language is English or second or third language is English. So, yeah.
John, I don't have a particular opinion on the Japanese hardcore world because, like, it is beyond me. How I'm sort of curious as to like how did you fall into this?
How did I fall into Zhao? Yeah. There's a bootleg record by Geezum that's called Punks Is Hippies, and I think no one really knows what it is, but I think they're trying to say punk is the evolution of hippieism, or maybe they're trying to insult hippies by saying punk hippies. And you would see that on people's backpacks. Like, what the hell does that mean? Punk is hippie. And that's when Geezum was dressed like Motley Crue. So you saw these Motley Crue looking like Japanese guys, and it said punk is hippies. Like, what is that? And so you hear people say, oh, Geezum, we see it on a backpatch, and eventually you just check it out. And I guess I was relatively, no, I was aware of it. And actually, I was actually this now before I was Geezum. And I got the Zhao 7 because I was just obsessing over it just because I wanted to know about it. And I saw the Crushed War was the first reissue of Zhao 7, and that was in Japan. And because it was imported from Japan, it's relatively expensive. So I spent $30 on a 7 single, and then I got to play Zhao. And it was honestly, Zhao's pretty cool. I like Zhao a lot. I like these two. Geezum's got issues, but Zhao's rad band. And so then Integrity, a band I really like, Integrity, like the main guy, Dwayne Hallion, he loves Japanese. Like, that's like the thing. And so he's got, or one of his things. So they've really covered Zhao like two or three times. They've covered Geezum like two or three times. And so, like, all right, well, let's check out the first material. And then actually, I'm very anti bootleg, but the reason I was able to check out Geezum before the reissue, like 5 years ago or 4 years ago, was somebody bootlegged the first Geezum record, which goes for like $700 to $1,000. And so I was able to pick up a bootleg for $20 and I checked it out. And I really dug it. And so that's how I got into it. But now it's official. You should buy that if you're going to buy it. And get rid of your bootlegs. Or sell it. Cheap.
Don't buy bootleg.
Right. What's your point of a bootleg? Like, let's say it's a long lost record that never got released, or what if it's a record that is not owned by the artist, is owned by the record label, and the record label doesn't want to print it at all because they're just not interested. Great example would be Dirt, which was the Marky Ramone record before he joined the Voidoids. And so the record label's doing nothing with it, and you can't hear it because they don't give a shit, and they're not going to sell it to anybody. So what if a bootlegger comes along and says, people should check this out? Or what if, like, rare and unreleased stuff that the artist just isn't interested in putting out, but is quality, someone puts out like a really nice bootleg? Or here's my best example. There was a David Bowie TV program called the David Bowie Floor Show, the 1984 Floor Show. And it was kind of David Bowie following in the steps of the Rolling Stones rock and roll circus. And David Bowie did like this TV special where he sang and he had like Marianne Faithfull and some other people on, and they all kind of like did this really cool like hour long program of live in studio performances. And that was owned by the TV station. The TV station never put it out because they probably own the rights to the video, but not necessarily the record itself. And they can't, and because so many people were involved, the rights are too, you know, strung out people that it could never actually get reached under the law. So a bootlegger did a really nice job and put it out. And I mean, I'm very anti-bootleg, and part of my day job now more than ever, I'm chasing down T-shirt bootleggers and beating the crap out of them. That being said, I'm glad that they made this bootleg of this David Bowie record, because I would have never heard it otherwise, and it is fantastic material. And for me, the point of copyright is to protect the art and to protect the artists that make the art. And so if copyright isn't serving that, then maybe bootleg is okay in that very limited strip. I don't know. That's my perspective.
I personally don't think that bootlegs are the greatest thing. Like, you know, shopping in Amsterdam, we found so many bootlegs.
Like some Europeans are like, I love Netherlands, and I went to that huge record fair. But in Europe, you definitely have to be more careful of bootlegs than, like, in the States, if somebody's selling a bootleg, they'll put bootleg on it or fan club, or they'll price it so it clearly, you know, it's a bootleg. Like, if it's a Misfits record for $10, you know, it's a bootleg, you know? But in, like, Amsterdam, or, like they'll, like, price, like, a $100 record for, like, $60. You're like, wow, what a deal. And you're like, and you really have to study, like, oh, wait, the bootleg. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, we picked up, like, just picked up. We didn't buy, like, so many Nirvana bootlegs.
Right,
and
right.
I would just pick it up and go, what is this? And to, like, my husband. And my husband would just, like, look at it and just go, put it down. and put I'm down like, now. Yeah, put it down. Like, but it wasn't, like, priced at $10. It was priced like any other record. So it was, like, you know, like 25 euros or something like that. But, yeah, no, like, we kind of have a no bootleg policy here because... you know, our thing is bootlegs, the money that goes towards these bootlegs aren't really going to the artist, right? I was like, they're going to someone else that, you know, somehow got it, like, you know, the files of it, whatever, and then decided to press it on LP or whatever. Yes, it might be a good way to hear unreleased things, but it's not necessarily great because, you know, my intention is to always make sure that the artist gets my money because I want to serve my punk community. So we don't buy bootleg. The other thing about bootleg is sometimes they sound like crap. Because whoever's pressing it doesn't care. They just want your money, right? So that's also another thing. You're always taking a gamble when you're buying a bootleg. You know, especially like when we're traveling, I'm never going to go back to Amsterdam anytime soon to return any of that albums I bought there, you know?
Fair enough.
There's a very similar thread to this whole conversation that I've seen percolating in certain corners of the internet right now, in which anyone involved in No Means No have really started warning people, please don't go buy our records on Discogs. Like, please stop trying to buy our records on eBay or whatever. And the implication to this, and the rumor right now, is that Alternative Tentacles is actually going to turn around and reissue everything. Don't shush. It's on the internet, John. Right? Alternative Tentacles is rumored to be reissuing everything. And if that's the case, it'd be fucking wonderful, because I can't buy a copy of Wrong on vinyl for less than $200 right now. They're raising that same issue. So this is my public service announcement.
Well, I think that's just what's happening right now, right? I was like, what? A lot of people are turning like this dog go get thing. I don't like, especially during the pandemic, I think, just because, like, I don't know, they're spending more time at home and maybe they want to listen to records, or maybe they got a stimulus check and is sending it on record. You know, I don't know what the trend is, but yeah, like I do think that record labels are probably paying attention to Discogs, just to see what the interest is. You know, clearly if a record is going for $150 on Discogs for whatever reason, you know, a repress will definitely, like, you know, lower that to some. It just depends on the collector, and it depends on, you know, what they're looking for, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
Have it. Well, that about wraps the episode. Does anybody have anything I want to talk about?
I don't know. All right, John, I'm going to do it.
All right, Adam.
Do it. Do it, John.
Do it,
Sam. We didn't prepare you for this.
Oh no!
All right, Punk Juice Podcast listeners, I'm retiring, which is to say, I'm at least moving into the leisurely retirement phase of my future podcast participation. So I'll break this down a little bit for you. So it's been a pretty long running theme on this show that I'm always grappling with the limited free time in my life, and that seems to be getting worse. Now, it could be my kids getting older and, you know, staying up later and demanding more of my time. It could be just like pandemic malaise. Like, I don't actually know, but I know I need to make a change. And I'm actually really bad at making changes like this, John. Like, I hold on to positions longer than I should. I minimize my efforts without ever formally calling it quits on things. This is largely because I think I suffer from, like, really gnarly sunk cost fallacy. And that habit always seems to produce, like, poor content, yet somehow retain titles. And I think that's something I'm trying not to do. Like, ask me how many punk news stories I've written in the past decade, say, while I was still retaining all of my editorial masthead positions there. Like, it's not great. So what do I do, like, with my limited time, with my need to cut something? Like, I can't cut the kids out because then I go to jail. I can't get rid of the job because then we have no money. I understand that I'm legally obliged to keep my wife around. I can't get rid of my little Canadian music newsletter because, like, to steal the phrase from the Blues Brothers, that's my mission from God right now. So I don't have a lot of other stuff, but I need, something's got to give. I need to get out of something. So I'm going to take a break. I don't know. Doesn't mean I'm not going to be back. It doesn't mean I'm burning all my bridges and, you know, nuking the place. I just need to get off the treadmill. And, you know, I suspect that once my personal shit gets sorted out there, I'm going to feel the itch and I'm going to start popping back in. You know, who knows? It could be every month. It could be every few months. I don't know. But I'll be back. Maybe the letter writers start, you know, just sending love letters pleading for more Adam content, and I'll be compelled by the power of love. I don't know. I've never been compelled by the power of love, but maybe that's the thing that happens. It beats me. But I just know that I need one less plate to spin to start feeling present, I guess, again. So that's the long and short of it, John. That's what's going on. So things be changing around here.
Heavy duty, man. It's the end of an era. The end of an era.
It is. So yeah, so that's happening, and it's, you know, it's not predicated by anything in particular. It's just, you know, I find that every week I get through the end of the week and I've just spent, like, all of my evenings, like, half completing all of the projects that I've committed to, and then the next week starts and I have to do the same thing. So I need, until I can invent a time machine or some sort of time warping machine, I need to pare back a bit just for the sake of my own constitution. So that is what's happening. So, I guess, did you tell people how to find me, how to get in touch with me in the interim? Because during this period, John will not be reading me mail. Although, John, you are welcome to just, like, Skype call me every day and read me mail. So, as you know, I've got my newsletter. It's at someparty.ca, someparty.ca. If you go there, you can find all my contact shit. You can get in touch with me. I put out some music writing once a week there. If by chance you've enjoyed the Adam White portions of the Punk News podcast and you want to summarily reward me for that, on the very bottom of the Some Party website, you'll find a little link where you can click to go buy me a coffee. So fuck listeners, you know, buy me a coffee. That'd be nice. But anyways, yeah, I'd love to hear from you. Go there, subscribe, get in touch, you know, reach out. I'm on Twitter as Adam White. And, you know, I'm not going away. I'm just going to do less stuff. So that's what's happening. That's where we can go. That's where we're going to go with this.
Well, there you have it. It's a bad day, but, you know, bittersweet, I guess. Adam might be back and, we'll see. So, we'll be here next week and it'll be a little bit of a different show. You know, the usual cast of characters will be here minus Adam. And we're sad to see these go, but listen, I definitely get where Adam's coming from, and real life gets in the way of fun sometimes, and that's the way it's got to be, and that's the way it is, and you know, nothing, if rudimentary is part of anything, Adam, nothing is permanent. Do what you got to do.
Also, nothing matters, and the world is horrible.
That's true, true.
It's not the Punk News podcast fault, why that is. So, I'm going to play a song. I'm gonna kill it with a song. I'm going to get us out of here with a song. So buckle up. This is 26 minutes of fucked up. No, I probably shouldn't play You're the Horse. You should go listen to that on Bandcamp and then buy a copy because it's really good. So here you go. This is the third track off of the 2001 debut from the Guelph, Ontario band, the Constantines. It is called Some Party. It happens to be a track that I named a bunch of internet stuff that I do after without asking permission. So there you go. This is Some Party by the Constantines. See ya, Punk News Podcast.